Good morning. Today's daf and kedushin is Chaf Hey. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. As long as Zechin is Maslibik Ariel Bashmuel. We begin today in Chaf Dalman Beis, and we are continuing our discussion of Evikanani and how he goes free. Evikanani goes free either by Kesef Vishtar, either by having somebody pay the money in order for him to go free. Machlokas Tanaim, whether who's going to pay the money, it's either going to be him or it's going to be somebody else. And that really is fundamentally rooted in the question of whether or not an Evikanani can actually be the recipient of money. Does he is he able to have a hand outside of his owner? And then by shtar, once again, machlokis between the Tanakama and Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah in terms of whether or not the shtar is going to be either handed to him or handed to somebody else. And the Gemara points out there is a Tana. We spent a little bit of time yesterday talking. The Tana is Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. There is a Tana who is of the opinion that the shtar cannot be held by him. The shtar has to be held by somebody else. Has to be given to somebody else. The Gemara yesterday in Chavdala Manalef introduces to the topic of Shein V'ayin. There's another way that Neve Kanani goes free, and that's Shein V'ayin. Shein V'ayin allows for Neve Kanani to go free, and that's where that's found in the Torah. Why didn't the Mishnah mention it if it's found in the Torah? So Tosus points out that perhaps it has to do with the fact that there are Tanaim, a number of them, who are of the opinion that by Shein V'ayin, even after the tooth gets knocked out and the eye gets knocked out, and they go free, but you still have to write a Get Shechur, according to some Tanaim. And so if that's in fact the case, so then it comes out now that even with Shein V'ayin, you still need a shtar. A Get Shechur. With the Gemara yesterday, and this is where we ended off with yesterday, noted a major machlokus between the Tanaim, whether or not you need to get Shechur if the Shein V'ayin are knocked out. And to that, what did we learn? There's a Hachra, there's a compromised position. If Shein V'ayin get knocked out, so then there does not need to be a Get Shechur that's written. If any of the other Rashi Yavarim, which we're going to be discussing today in detail, in graphic detail, if any of the other Rashi Yavarim get knocked out, so then you do have to write a Get Shechur. And the Gemara, and we ended off yesterday by pointing out what's the difference between them. The difference between them is that Shein V'ayin is explicitly written in the Torah, but the other Rashi Parakim, that's learned out through a Drasha. And since it's learned out through a Drasha, so therefore you have to write a shtar on top of that. Yesterday I quoted, at the end of this year, a comment by Tosus. Tosus wonders, okay, halachically speaking, what difference does it make either it's explicitly written in the Torah, or if it's learned through a drasha, meaning they still have the same status, they're both in Yani Da'araisa, so why should there be a difference? So Tosu says it has to do with the fact that not everyone's familiar with the drasha. Those who come to the Daf Yomi, they know the drasha. Those who are learning know the drasha, but those who just read the Chumash and, you know, and hear the Chumash and Shul, so they don't know about the drasha. So that's why the Get Shechur has to be written. People may not be familiar with the fact that just because his finger got knocked out by the owner, so maybe, okay, he doesn't have to go free for that. He's not going to go free for that. It's not Shein, it's not Ayin. So, and Me'ikar Din, of course he goes free, and it's a drasha, so that's why the shtar is written, in order so that people know that he's in fact entitled to his freedom. Okay, this is what we did yesterday. We just have a little bit more to cover from yesterday's daf. Okay, we're right in the middle of the Amud on Chavdal Amud Beis, and pick it up right where we left off yesterday. My time with Rabbi Shimon. What is the reason behind the Shita of Rabbi Shimon? Yalav Shiluch Shiluch Meisha Meisha Bishtar Av Evinami Bishtar. Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that regardless of what gets knocked out, you have to write a Get Shechur, even if it's Shein V'ayin, you have to write it. Why? He says because of the Gzera Sheva of La. It says La by Evikanani. Sorry, it says La by Evikanani. It says La by Isha. We know that a woman goes free with a get. We never Kanani has to go free with a get. So the Gemara says if the Torah would have written Chavshi after the word Yishachenu, so then Rabbi Meir would say, I agree with you. But the Torah, in phrasing it very carefully, places the word Chavshi in front of the word Yishachenu, which means he is free. Done. And then he's chofesh, he's free, he's totally free, and not even a shtar has to be written. Okay, so the Gemara quotes a little bit of limudim in terms of how to understand the shitas of both Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Meir. Tanu Rabbanan. Okay. As we're going to be discussing now over the course of the next bit of Gemara, in order for there to be a release on the basis of the knocking out of an eye or a tooth or the other extremities, so there has to be an intentional act of malice on the part of the owner. So, and as we're going to see, not only has to be intentional, but it has to be physical. You'll see what I mean in just a moment. Tanur Rabbanan, we start with a brisa. He called in a v'sama. Let's say the owner hits his evakanani, hits him on the eye, knocks out his eye. Alas novacharsha, hits him on the ear and causes him to become deaf, has a loss of hearing as a result of the hit. Eved yotzei ben lecheres. So in those cases, the eved goes free. Okay, these are classic examples where the damage that's caused by the owner is the direct damage, physical direct damage that the owner caused to his eved kanani, and therefore the eved kanani gains his freedom. Neged eino ve'eino ro'eh, keneged azno ve'eino shomea. But let's say he hits the eved kanani, but not he doesn't hit the eved kanani. He just, let's say, claps his hands right in front of his eyes, or claps his hands right in front of his ears, produces a tremendous sound, but does not physically make contact with the eved kanani. But the eved kanani loses his sight and loses his hearing as a result of these blows. So the eved kanani does not go free. So in other words, there has to be the kind of hit where it's a direct hit, directly on the body of the eved kanani. I'm Rav Shem le Rav Ashi, l'mem b'dekal alav klomu. Now Rav Shem says to Rav Ashi, wait one second. If you produce a sound, you want to tell me that that's halachically insignificant? It's not true. Let's say that my chicken sticks his head into your glass bowl, and the chicken makes a tremendous sound, and as a result of the sound, he breaks the glass. So you have to pay nezek shalem. Now, I don't want to get too involved. There is a discussion about sroros, about an animal not doing the damage with his physical body, but producing in this case, a sound wave. Generally speaking, sroros is discussed by an animal pressuring a stone, placing pressure on a stone, and the stone shooting out. Okay, so but either way, it's the point here is let's keep the point really simple. The chicken here in question didn't physically break the glass jar with his body, but created the sound wave that broke the glass jar, and you have to pay nezek shalom, you have to pay damages. V'amar Rav Yosef, amar be'rav, sus shitsanof v'chamor shina'ar v'shiver kel mesocha b'ayis m'sham m'chatzin nezek. If my horse or my donkey were to lay out make a sound, a braying sound, a neighing sound, and break kelim based on their sound, so you have to pay chatzin nezek. Now previously we said nezek shalem, and now we're saying chatzin nezek. So again, this is a question of the halach of tzoros, and it's important. It's just right now I want to stay focused on the point of the Gemara, which is that if you produce a sound and you damage based on the production of sound, so therefore you're going to be chayav. So the Gemara is basically asking, now I don't understand. When it comes to the eved kanani, we made a distinction. If you hit him on the eye, if you hit him on the ear, then he's going to go free. But if you just produce a sound which causes blindness or causes deafness, so he doesn't go free. But meanwhile, in these cases that we're learning regarding animals and the damage created by animals, I'm responsible for all damages created by my animals, even if it's the damages created just by the production of sound. So that's a problem. So the Gemara says that you got to make a distinction between animals versus humans. When it comes to humans and they hear tremendous sound, so even though you obviously contributed to the damage, but you're not the sole responsible party for the damage. The victim himself also was a contributing factor to the damage. It's not either or, it's both. The person himself, he also reacted to the sound, and based on that, so he also has a part in the damage that was incurred. Kidatayin, the Gemara quotes a brisa that actually spells this point out. Hamavis is chavero, you scare your friend. Right, you think it's funny. You're right. You stand behind the door. He walks in, and you scare him. And as a result of that, he jumps and he falls and he does all these damages. So pater midine adam. So he can't take you to court. However, midine shamayim. I'm sorry, v'chay b'day shamayim. Now he can't take you to court, but you know you really caused the damage, and so you should pay him. But it's not something that could be taking place in court. So, but you see clearly over here, why can't he take it to court? Can't take it to court because you didn't physically touch him. And the fact that he jumped back and he fell, so once again, those were things that was within his control. And again, I'm not, right, this is obviously not an exoneration. The person who scared him obviously did something wrong. But in terms of the technical, very legal question of who is the scarer, is he financially responsible? Is he solely financially responsible? And the Gemara's answer is no, he's not. So, Ketan, talk about Aznav Acharsha Potter. And here the Brisa gives examples that we are discussing right now. And that is, let's say I create a great sound right by his ear. And as a result of that, he becomes deaf. So, Potter. So, again, according to the strict letter of the law, you're Potter. He won't be able to take you to court. However, if you grab him and you yell in his ear while you're grabbing him, so then you'd be chayv, because now you took an actual physical hand on his body, you brought him close to you, and so now that there's actual physical contact between the assailant and the victim, so then you're going to be chayv for all the damages that you occurred, that occurred. So once again, so now, yes, the Gemara says basically that's correct. When it comes to the damages from one person to another person, there actually has to be physical damage. If there is not physical damage, even though you produced a great sound, even though you scared him, so because he himself should be able to control his reaction, so therefore you are not the sole responsible party for the damages that were occurred, and therefore may ikar adin according to strict letter of the law, you're not going to be chayev. All right. So the question's fair. There's no more context given in the Gemara, so I'd only be guessing. Let's say the owner hit him on the eye and diminished his eyesight, or hit him on the tooth to loosen the tooth, but could basically still chew in and eat. So, if as long as he could still use his eyes and his teeth, so then the Eved Kanayin does not go free. Ein Eved Yosef Melacheres, the Imlav Eved Yosef Melacheres. However, if the eye's been incapacitated, the tooth been totally incapacitated, so that he can't use either eye or tooth anymore, so then he goes free. Tanyidach, the Gemara gives us another brisa. Harish Aisa Eino Kihuya Visama Shino Niduda Vipila. Here in the second brisa, we're basically starting in a position of the eyes kind of working. And the tooth is kind of working, right? The sight in the eye is diminished already. This is the starting point of the second brisa. And then what the owner did is he hit it so that now they can't see anymore. The tooth was already loose, and then the owner hit it and then knocked it out. So, im yachol yishamish b'hem kvar, and over here the criteria is going to be the exact same criteria, which is that as long as the eye, even in its weakened state, as long as he could have made use out of it, and what the owner did now is incapacitated the eye, so then the Eved Kanani goes free. Same thing with the tooth. If the loose tooth could have been used, and by the owner knocking it out, now incapacitated, he prevented now his ability from using that tooth because it's no longer there, so then he's going to go free. So basically in both prices, the point is essentially the same point. If it's still functional, so then the Eved Kanani doesn't go free. If it loses function, then the Eved Kanani goes free. And the Gemara says, Tzrich, and the Gemara says, and both prices are necessary, even though they're both telling me essentially the same point. So the Gemara says, because look, if all I had was the first brisa, he went from having 20/20 vision to having less than 20/20 vision. But in the second brisa, well, already his eyesight was already diminished. You could have made the argument that, okay, well, I mean, all I did was just, I exacerbated the situation. And I'm more than exacerbated. I do understand this. But he wasn't starting with real good eyesight to begin with. So really, he's going to go free. So that second brisa is telling us, yes, that's correct. He's going to go free. Now, in the second brisa, you understand that you took him from having poor eyesight to having no eyesight. So in the second brisa, so you understand he's going to go free. But in the first brisa, he went from having excellent eyesight to having poor eyesight. So again, I might have thought that, okay, he could still see, again, on a diminished basis, but he could still see. Tzricha, the Gemara says, therefore they are both necessary, both brisas are necessary. It's all a function of functionality. If the owner did something to the Eved Kanani that causes a loss of sight or of the ability to chew, so then he goes, then the Eved Kanani goes free. Tan Rabban Harishaya Rabo Rofe. Let's say the owner was a doctor. V'amar lo licho lo eino. V'sama. And now the Evakanani, for treatment, he goes to his owner for medical treatment. And what the owner now did is he's now trying to help out his Evakanani. So here, in the context of practicing medicine, and what happens is, okay, it happens. So a little too much application of the ointment on the eye, and the Evakanani loses his sight. So or let's say his owner was a dentist. And so the Evakanani for his dental needs goes to his owner. And while the owner is working on his teeth, scraping the teeth, so he knocks out a tooth. Okay, it was an accident. So according to the Tanakhama, the intent obviously was the best of intent, but Lamaisa, the owner knocked out the eye, the owner knocked out the tooth. Again, with no intention of malice, and just the opposite over here, an intention of helping his Evakanani, but when all said and done, knocked it out, therefore it goes free. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Omer Vishichata, and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no, the Evakanani doesn't go free in these cases, because the Torah, when describing the knocking it out, says, Shichata, it has to be in a destructive manner. It has to be where the intent was to be destructive, meaning a scenario. The Torah is describing a scenario where the owner gets upset with the Evakanani and is abusive and hits him. So then, under those circumstances, he goes free. But here in these contexts, the owner was trying to help the Evakanani by putting in medicine in the eye and by doing some dental work on the Evakanani. So the Evakanani is not going to go free in these circumstances. V'rabanan. Now, we turn back to the Tanakhama. Hi, Vishichasa, my Avdile. What do you do with the Vishichasa? So, Mibai Lelechid the Tain, the Gemara says, we need it for the following price. Rabbi Lazar, Mer HaReisha Oshiyado, Lemeshivchasa Vesima, Uber Shebemea, Pater. So, according to the Tanakhama says, there comes a point in time where I agree with this thinking, with the thought process. But over here, here's the scenario where I agree. Let's say the owner was helping his Shifcha Kananis deliver a baby. And in doing so, he inserts his hands into the Shifcha Kananis in order to help facilitate the delivery. And while the hands are inside, so by pure accident, by total accident, so sticks his finger in the eye of the fetus and blinds the fetus. Under those circumstances, so even though he knocked out the eye, but he's going to be putter, he's going to be exempt. My time up. Damakrav v'shichasa achichavein l'shachasa. So there has to be some sort of intent. Now it's interesting. According to the Tanakhama, we're basically now making a distinction between practicing on the eye itself versus doing some sort of general practice and really a freak accident where I wasn't even aiming for the eye. I was just facilitating childbirth. And still, by accident, the finger went into the eye. Only under those circumstances, according to the Tanakhama, can you say, really, there was no intent whatsoever.
What about competency? What about competency?
Well, I mean, when the Gemara discusses Rofe, I mean, the Gemara just assumes that there's, you know, he's got some survey. He's got some sort of... understood, they didn't give degrees out back then, but you know, some understood level of competency. Now, as far as Rav Shimon Gamliel is concerned, so both points are meant, meaning v'shichas v'shichasa. The fact that the Torah could have said v'shiches and the Torah says v'shichasa, so that's two exclusions. The two exclusions are coming to tell me one, the scenario in which the owner put his hands into the womb of the delivering shivcha kananis, and by sheer accident blinded the eye of the fetus, and also, in our scenario, meaning the first one that was illustrated, where he was actually, the Evakanani asked for some treatment, and he was trying to treat the eye. And under those circumstances, again, because his intent was good, so according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, even if by accident he blinds the eye or he knocks out the tooth, he's not going to his Evakanani is going to go free. Evakanani is not going to go free. The idach shicha shichata lo darish. And as far as the Tanakhama is concerned, he doesn't darshan the additional hay. Amar Rav Sheshes, we are towards the bottom of Chavdal Amud Beis. Harish Aisa Eino Simuya. Eved Yotze Bahem Lecheros. So let's say the eye was already blinded. So in other words, he couldn't see. But what the owner does is he knocks it out. So he knocks out a blind eye. So the eye already lost its functionality, But yet, what the owner did is he physically knocked it out. So, Eved Yotzei Mamlech, so according to Rav Sheshes, that's still going to be cause for a release. Because, my taima mechusar evahu. Because that's actually a loss of an eiver, v'tana tuna. And the Gemara says, and I'm going to show you a braisa that this is in fact absolutely so. Tamas v'zachrus b'meima v'in tamas v'zachrus b'ofos. We know that when we bring a carbon, so carbon can come in the form of an animal, or it can come in the form of a bird. And also there are menachos as well, but that we'll actually talk about later this morning. The when it comes to an animal, so there's an idea that the animal has to be a tamim. It has to be a non-blemished animal, no physical external blemish on the animal, and also zachrus. In other words, by animals we have to differentiate between the male and the female. Males are going to go for carbon ola, females are going to go for a shlamim. I mean, male could also be brought as a shlamim as well. There is differentiation in terms of the genders. When it comes to birds, there's no criteria of bamum, meaning by a bird does not have to be physically perfect. And furthermore, the bird you don't have to segregate the male from the female bird, which is fantastic because for most of us. It's nearly impossible to make that kind of segregation between male and female. So there's no Thomas and Zachris as it relates to a bird. Okay, that's a starting point of the discussion. Yachl yavshagapa nakta ragla nakta ena. Now, but what if let's say the bird is actually missing a limb, right? One of its wings is totally dried up, or the leg is cut off, or the eye is gouged. There's no eye in the bird. So Tam Alamra Mina Of Volo Kol Of. So the Gemara quotes the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, you're going to bring some of the birds, you're not going to bring all the birds. Meaning, a bird with no eye, that's not a physical blemish. That's actually considered like the bird is missing a limb. And as a result of that, the bird cannot be brought as a carbon. So that's beyond physical blemish. That is considered a missing limb. So what we're saying now in the Gemara is the same thing is true regarding the Eved Kenani. Eved Kenani has an eye but is not functional, can't see with the eye. But the owner then now knocks out the useless eye. That's considered mechusar eiver, and therefore the Eved Kenani is going to go free. Am Rabbi Chiya bar Ashi Am Rav Haisa Lo. Haisalo Yaseres Vichatcha. So let's say the Eved Kenani was born not with five fingers but with six fingers. Okay, I always think of Marlon. Marlin pitcher great Antonio Fonseca. I don't know, whatever. It's baseball. It's nonsense. But he's a pitcher with six fingers. I always find it cute that you know that six fingers is really useless for him in terms of pitching. But actually, he had multiple fingers on both of his hands. So I guess you can wonder how he wears a glove on the other hand. But things if you're curious. Anyway, but let's say the Eved Kenani has an additional finger, and the owner cut off that additional finger. So now, basically, now he's at five. So is that considered Yotze Lecheres or not? So Eved Yotze B'Mecheres. So the top of the Gemara Kedushin Chaf Hamad Aleph. So the Eved does in fact go free. Am Rav Huna V'Hushin Nisperes Agav Hayad. So Rav Huna says that extra digit has to be in coordination with the other fingers as well. Meaning, so that when you look at him, you will see a six finger, and it's if you were to count, one, two, three, it would count along with the other fingers. Meaning, it can't just simply be an appendage that kind of awkwardly sticks out. It has to be an appendage, the kind of appendage where it looks like another one of his fingers. So thereby which, if you cut it off, it is in fact considered a mechusar eiver, and therefore this Eved Kenani would go free. Okay. Let's continue. Chaf Hei Amud Aleph. We're at the two dots towards the top of the Amud, and we start today with a. We start the next discussion on the Gemara with a story. Sabi de Nezunya lo asa lepirka de Rav Chista. The elders of Nezunya didn't go to Shir. Rav Chista was giving Shir in town, and the elders, meaning they were telling me to chachamim, but for reasons which we don't totally know why, they simply didn't go to Shir. Amale Rav Amnuna zil, amale li Rav Amnuna zil saninu. So Rav Chista says to Rav Amnuna, listen, enough with these people. In other words, they need to come to Shir. It's not right. It's not right they don't come to Shir. even though they're Talmid Chachamim in their own right, but they need to be role models for the rest of the community, they need to come to Shir. So Rav Chisda says to Rav Hamnuna, you're going to go and you're going to tell them that they need to go into some sort of Cherem. I think it'd be better to describe it as like kind of like house arrest. Look at Rashi. Rashi pretty much describes it as house arrest. Zil Tzaninu, Emor Aleihem, this is the second line of Rashi, Lehi Sagir Leishe Bebayis. They need to sit in their house. This is how we're going to describe excommunication as it relates to Tamei Chacham. Kedamer b'moed katan lemer lo derech kavod hasger v'she beveisecha. So basically, now Rav Chisda put them in house arrest. Azal amar lehu my time lo aser rabban lepirka. So now Rav Hamnuna is trying to do a little bit of detective work, and he goes over to the elders and he says to the elders, "Can you explain to me? What's wrong with you people? Why aren't you going to Shir?" So Amrule, Amai Nesa, the Beinah Minei Milsav Lo Pashalan. So they have a tain on Rav Chisda. They say, "Look, we ask questions, and he never answers the questions." And I know. Yes. It's not the first time in history this has happened. I understand. So he asks questions, and he doesn't answer the questions. And so, what do we need to go to Shir for? And he's not going to answer our questions. So I'm aluhu mi beisu mi nai midi v'lo pashin lachu. So Rav Hamnuna says something interesting. Interesting meaning I don't fully understand it. But Rav Hamnuna says, "Well, did you ever ask me a question and answer?" So, but I'm guessing. Okay, I'm just throwing it out there. This is speculation. I'm guessing that Rav Hamnuna is basically like a kind of like an arm and extension of Rav Chisda. And it's pretty clear in the story. Meaning, Rav Chisda is upset with him and he sends Rav Hamnuna. So Rav Hamnuna, if you will, the Gemara is not saying this. I'm saying that, and I may be wrong. But like Rav Hamnuna is like the assistant rabbi, the associate rabbi. Meaning, Rav Hamnuna says, "Look, I answer all your questions. So like, you shouldn't be broigus with Rav Chisda. Your questions are being answered." So, now, Bominei. So they turn to Rav Hamnuna and they say, "Okay, we'll ask you a question. And let's see how you do with the question that we ask you." And apparently they know that they're going to set him up for failure. But Bominei, Evich Yisirsa Rabba Bebeit Samahu. So what if now the Evichanan, and this is why the story's here, by the way. I mean, this story could have be put anywhere in Shas, but obviously the question that's going to be asked is going to be germane to our discussion. So what if the Adon cuts the beitzim of his evikanani. Now, to be clear, however, we have to be graphic, otherwise we're not going to understand the Gemara. It's still in the sack, meaning, but it's just simply either going to be a cutting of the van's deferen, or it's going to be an actual crushing of the testicle itself, but it's still in the sack. And so the Gemara's question is this considered a mumsha begalui? Because on one hand, right, he can't physically see it, it's still in the sack. On the other hand, it's an external extremity. So is this fall under the category of the release and the freedom of the Evikanani, if this is what the master did to the Evikanani? So is this considered mumsha begalui? Dami olam. So lo hava biyade. So Rav Hamnuna did not know the answer. Okay, and again, you saw that coming because these elders, they had tainus. So Amrle Mashimcha. So now the elders asked Rav Hamnuna, "What is your name?" And I guess they knew the answer to this question as well. So Amrle Hamnuna. So he said, "My name is Hamnuna. Amrle Lav Hamnuna Ella Karnuna." So we're going to change your name. Your name to us is no longer Hamnuna. Rather, it's Karnuna, Rashi says. It is obviously a derogatory reference to Rav Hamnuna. Rashi says, Karnuna from the idea, Yoshev Karanos Ata, Velo Bal Torah. You know what you do all day? You sit in the corner, you hang out in the corner. You're not learning Torah. If you were learning Torah, you know the answer to these questions. So we're going to now call you from this point forward Karnuna. So already, by the way, just from the little that we see in the dialogue between the elders, And Rav Hamnuna, we see that they're a little cantankerous. Okay, but Rav Chisda didn't care. Meaning, Rav Chisda said they should come to Shir anyway. Bring them and bring their somewhat difficult personality. It doesn't matter. They should be coming to Shir. So Asla Kame de Rav Chisda Amrle Masisa by Minach. So they go now. Rav Hamnuna takes the question to Rav Chisda. Because, as we're going to see in just a moment, Rav Chisda did know the answer to the question. So Rav Chisda says, "I'll tell you the answer, and here's how you're going to arrive at the answer. You have to know a Mishnah in Negayim, and once you know the Mishnah in Negayim, So then you're going to know the answer to the question, of course. Now, this is where Bikius really helps out. Okay. But just as a parenthetical note, there's a Daf Yomi to go through Shas. That's what we do here. They also have a cycle for Mishnah Yomis, and it just started this week. You do two Mishnayos a day, and you get through all Mishnayos in 5.5 years. So it's a good idea. Anyway, it's whatever. There's a schedule. If you want, I'll send you the link to the schedule. Okay, in the meantime, however. Okay, let's, so, the Mishnah Nagayim. The Mishnah Nagayim goes like this. Esrim v'arba rashi evarim sheba adam. So there are 24 extremities in a person, in a man, and kulam ein matamim mishum echia. Oh, this week's Parsha. Okay, it's coordinating beautifully. So in this week's Parsha, so we are introduced to the idea of tzaras. One of the tzaras is what's called a mechia. A mechia is where you have a white spot, and within the white spot, you have a piece of healthy flesh. Okay, and this kind of tzaras is referred to as a mechia. Now, just as a technical note, in order for this to qualify as a mechia, it has to be where the entire white spot and the healthy skin in the middle has to be seen from one vantage point. If it's not seen from one vantage point, so then it's not going to qualify as a mechia. So that means that it can't be on a